The NFL draft in its entirety has come and gone. As always, there are winners, there are losers, and there's a certain quarterback who took a tumble right to the fifth round. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that sixth or seventh spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides. Welcome to the Fumble Rooski Podcast, powered by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Web Consulting. I'm your host, CJ Medeiros. With me is my good friend and co-host, Chris Kostich, and a very special guest, Sports Kita's own resident draft analyst and one of the biggest fans of Led Zeppelin out there, Tony Pauline. First and foremost, Tony, how are you doing on this fine Tuesday afternoon?
I'm okay. Weather's beautiful out in New York. The draft is over. I can breathe a little bit now, and life will eventually get back to normal, or as normal as it can be for me. So I'm okay. Thank you for asking.
Awesome. Well, at least you're not tethered to your phone as much. Hey, the news world moves fast, so sometimes you just got to move faster. I totally get it. So first and foremost, when it comes to the draft, let's all address the elephant in the room. Certain quarterback or former quarterback for the Colorado Golden Buffaloes, Shedeur Sanders, fell directly to the fifth round. And you were actually among the first to report on Sports Kita that he was dropping on draft boards. And so before we get to Shedeur, how do you personally just grade the Browns in this draft?
I think they did a solid job. They get Mason Graham. They make that trade. They get one of the better players in this draft. And they get and in doing so, they also get an additional first-round pick in 2026. I think taking Dylan Gabriel in the third round was a little head-scratching because they admit that he's going to be their backup quarterback. Why take a backup quarterback in the third round when there were a lot of other better quarterbacks available to them? Let's see, who else did they select? Carson Schwessinger at the top of round two, one of the best off-the-ball linebackers in this draft. If you had read what I had been writing since the end of March, there was a chance of Schwessinger, actually since the beginning of April. I think his individual pro day was April 4. Schwessinger was one of the best off-the-ball linebackers in this draft. It's not surprising. Quinshon Judkins, a lot of people thought it was going to be Travion Henderson. I understand the Quinshon Judkins selection. It fits the mold of the type of ball carrier that they want. He's a violent ball carrier. Harold Fannin Jr., really not too different from the player that they have on the roster right now, David Njoku. I was a little bit surprised by that pick. I thought they got great value in Dylan Sampson in the fourth round. I thought he was more of a third rounder. And then, of course, Shedeur Sanders. You may not like him. You may not like his father. But really, anything out of the top 100 was outstanding value for Shedeur Sanders.
When you look at this Browns draft, especially when you look at them trading out of the number two overall pick to go a couple spots back to number five, did you see this as more of like them waving the white flag? All right, we're starting over. Let's start out right. Let's get a big old draft capital out of it. Was that kind of the vibe that you got out of it?
Not really. I mean, the Browns, I don't think they're that far away from being a competitive and winning team. They made the playoffs 2 years ago with Joe Flacco, who they brought back into the mix for this year. I mean, the problem with the Browns is the problem that a lot of franchises have. They can't get the quarterback position right, and the quarterback position is a drag on them. So I don't think it's that at all. In fact, I think they really fortified that defense, and they added some additional pieces on offense. Obviously, the offensive line is an issue if their starters and their top backup can't stay healthy. But they've got some good other pieces there. The Browns, like the Jets, a couple other franchises, it's all going to come down to the quarterback. And that franchise has been a graveyard for quarterback. We'll see if Flacco can, you know, bring back some of the magic he had with him 2 years ago. I thought that was a great signing. And now they got 85 gazillion quarterbacks on the roster. Don't know what the heck they're going to do there. But I don't think it's waving a white flag. I think they said, hey, listen, you know, we like Travis Hunter, but we don't like him enough that we're going to use the second pick on him rather than trade back three spots and get an additional first round choice in 2026.
That is a great point. So we got to now move on to Shedeur Sanders himself. Obviously, back in December, he's considered likely the first overall pick. Flash forward to February, you know, you hear talk of, oh, who's this Cam Ward guy? Then you actually, like I mentioned earlier, one of the first to report that he was falling on a lot of teams' draft boards. Then, you know, draft day comes and goes. He falls out of the first round, not selected on day two, falls to round five. Can you compare this to maybe any other prospect? Like, has there anyone who's been projected to go this high who's just fallen? And we all know why, right? I mean, heck, Johnny Manziel.
Do you know why? I mean,
but he's not the only one that has issues, is what I was saying. Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. I was just going to say, like, for example, Johnny Manziel had all those issues.
Well, he really doesn't have issues. I mean, it was a media-driven story with no basis. Now, to answer your question, could you compare him to any other quarterback that had a fall? Well, let's look at Quinn Ewers. I mean, Quinn Ewers at one point in time was considered in the media as a top 10 pick, although he was never thought about that in the scouting community. And he fell into the seventh round. And Quinn Ewers did a lot more winning than Shedeur Sanders. I think the problem is it was a media narrative that never died. I mean, it was daily. It was thrown in your face. I don't watch ESPN too much, but the gym that I go to every morning, they have ESPN every day. Is Shedeur Sanders going to go to the Cleveland Browns? Is he going to go to New York Giants? Is he going to be a top 10 pick? And it was nonstop Shedeur Sanders, and it's not going to stop. I mean, the big story of Cleveland Browns camp is not going to be Mason Graham. It's not going to be Carson Schwessinger. It's going to be Shedeur Sanders. But you really have to go back. You know, you talked about December. You got to go back to the summertime. And in the summertime, NFL scouts graded Shedeur Sanders as a mid-second round pick. So coming into the season, scouts didn't even grade him as a first-round prospect. That's what the people who make the decisions thought of him. 2024 wasn't that great of a year for Shedeur Sanders. You can't sit there. You can, but as someone who watches film, I can tell you Shedeur Sanders' film in 2024 really wasn't better than his 2023 film. In fact, in many areas, it regressed. And oh, by the way, that guy that you mentioned, Cam Ward, his film was much better, really, from the first game of the season against the Florida. You can tell Cam Ward was a completely improved quarterback, where you couldn't say the same thing about Shedeur Sanders. He was still making the same mistakes. Fundamentally, he's very poor. Throws with poor footwork, throws off his back foot, holds the ball too long, tries to improvise too much, runs in reverse when he's being pressured. Those are things that are sometimes tough to coach out of a quarterback. Then you get into the postseason, and the Shrine Bowl, when I started, you know, writing that Cam Ward was the number one quarterback in this draft, the Shrine Bowl and Senior Bowl week, which I attend for 20 plus years now, that is the first and largest concentration of scouts and teams and coaches and general managers. And at that point, I started hearing Cam Ward's the number one quarterback in this draft. Cam Ward is rated much higher than Shedeur Sanders, who made a lot of mistakes in the pre-draft process. I wrote an article about it on Saturday. I'm sorry, I wrote an article about it on, it was Saturday, before day three started, right before he was selected, it went up, as a matter of fact. And Shedeur Sanders shows up at the Shrine Bowl. There's a lot of excitement. He doesn't throw a pass. He comes out one day in street clothes, walks across the field the first day of practice, and then he leaves town. Leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. Now you're heading towards the combine, and it's pretty apparent now that Cam Ward is going to be the first quarterback selected, could be the first pick of the draft by the Tennessee Titans or another team like the New York Giants or the Las Vegas Raiders, who are going to trade up. Shedeur Sanders does nothing. Shedeur Sanders goes to the combine. He doesn't have good interviews, which has been, you know, it's been out there. A lot of his interviews rub people the wrong way, and he doesn't participate in anything. Get every quarterback that was selected before Shedeur Sanders, whose name is not Cam Ward, compete through at the combine, Shrine Bowl, or Senior Bowl. And in many instances, most of those quarterbacks did both. They were at the Shrine Bowl and combine, Senior Bowl and combine. Shedeur Sanders stood on the sidelines with that glittery chain and the hat. He did nothing besides have bad interviews. You know, there's red flags that are going up all along. And part of the problem is the Sanders family decided not to hire an agent. And an agent would have helped navigate him through these choppy waters. So the situation keeps getting worse and worse. And you referenced that I was one of the first people out there who said the combine, his draft stock is falling. Yet they did nothing to help it. All they did was continue to commit unforced errors. He goes to his pro day. His pro day was okay. I talked to people who were there. I was not there. They said he was very nervous. They said he was shaky. The ball was wobbly. They said at the very end, they did a simulated two-minute drill. He's down in the red zone. There's 7 seconds left on the clock on a two-minute drill. Just walks off the field. Doesn't finish it. Scouts flew out to Colorado to watch him throw. So the pre-draft process, teams look at it as a precursor of the shape of things to come. And he's failing in that aspect. And then there is the Deion factor. You know, teams were concerned that if they selected Shedeur Sanders, if things weren't going the way Deion wanted them to go or the way Deion thought they would go, he would be very outspoken and critical of teams in press conferences that he has with the Colorado Buffaloes. And that's why they were hesitant to draft him. And then there's also the situation with the Cleveland Browns and the New York Giants. You have a head coach and a general manager on a short leash. If you draft Shedeur Sanders very early and the head coach is fired, everybody's going to be screaming that they want Deion Sanders or that Deion Sanders should be the next head coach of your team. And that is a lot of headlines, aggravation, criticism that franchises didn't want to deal with. So I think that, you know, as you kind of proved that, the Shedeur Sanders situation is more media driven in large part because of his name than anything else. He was a good prospect. He wasn't a great prospect. He wasn't worthy off of the past 2 years of film to be a top 10 pick. He was 13-11 at Colorado. He never really competed for a conference championship, never had his team in the mix for a national championship, as opposed to say Quinn Ewers, who the past 2 years was in the college football semifinals, has done a lot of winning on the college level since he was a freshman, had a lot of tools. People projected him as a very early pick. He falls into the seventh round, yet everyone's still talking about Shedeur Sanders.
One thing that I wanted to touch on real quick that you brought up was the pre-draft, like the combine interviews, all the pre-draft interviews, right? And that seemed to be the biggest, one of the bigger talking points, especially right before he got drafted or right after. I forget when exactly a lot of this stuff started coming out. But one of the stories was that he had a terrible interview with Brian Daboll. And another one came out. I don't know if it was the same thing with the Giants or if it was with a different team, but it was like to the extent of he was wearing too much cologne to the point where the coach had to walk out because he thought he was going to faint. How true are those stories? In that sense, I guess.
I mean, I don't know about the cologne story. I'm not going to speak to it. I wasn't there. I don't hear it. The only thing that I heard about the interviews was teams were talking to him, and it seemed like Shedeur Sanders didn't care what they were saying. He had no interest in what the teams were telling him. The thing about the Shrine Bowl, the Senior Bowl, the Combine, even Pro Day, This is one huge job interview. That's what it boils down to. With a future employer that's going to invest millions, if not tens of millions of dollars in you. So you better be on your game. I had heard that he kind of seemed disinterested in what the coaches were telling him. I don't want to say he was above it all. That's the way it was kind of presented to me. And again, I mean, you're supposed to be the quarterback of the team. You're the leader of the team. When you give off this persona, that's going to really turn a lot of people off, or as I said, rub them the wrong way, as it evidently did. And I go back to the point that they never hired an agent. And, you know, the agent would have helped navigate them through the choppy waters. Again, whether they would have listened to it, I don't know. But part of what an agent does is, you know, they get ready for the combine. They practice the 40, the start of the 40, the vertical jump, the position drills. They also role play interviews and the interview process because it's so important. People in the media will talk about the 40s at the combine and the vertical jump. The two most important aspects of the combine are the medicals and the interviews. You could be 6'5", 310 pounds, run a 4.7 in the 40, jump 38 inches. If you fail the medicals or the interviews, you're going to drop like a rock. And that's what happened. That's one of the reasons why Shedeur Sanders dropped like a rock.
Yep. So obviously it's now become a well-established fact that he had a really abysmal interview with the Giants. And pivoting from Shedeur a bit, I want to talk about that. The Giants obviously traded up for Jackson Dart. So my thing is, would they – I'm trying to think of, like, how to word this, but it's more of a – so Dable obviously was upset with him. Like, was it anything, like, specific? Because there was a report, I believe it was on Sports Illustrated, where Dable corrected Sanders on something and he apparently didn't take too kindly to it. Can you speak to that at all?
No, but it goes hand in hand with what I just told you. That, Sanders, people I talked to who did interviews said just Sanders wasn't interested in what they were saying. So I can't speak to that specific example, but it basically goes hand in hand with what I had heard and just explained to you.
So when Diana Rossini came out earlier today and said that leak sources were telling her that they believe that the tumble probably could have played out a little differently if he actually had an agent. I feel like from what you've been telling us.
She said that today?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's because I've been saying that since I was at the Giants facility Sunday morning, and I said that one of the biggest problems of this was the fact he never hired an agent, as I've mentioned several times on the show.
Well, there you go. So I'm assuming you saw the Mel Kiper rant.
I saw like 15 seconds of it. I basically watch NFL Network and work the phones, but I saw whatever was on social media.
Do you have any thoughts on the Mel Kiper rant at all?
Yeah, I think it's foolish. I think it's utterly foolish. I think the rant would have been legitimate and credible if he said that certain franchises have no clue on how to evaluate quarterbacks, because that's true. The Cleveland Browns, the New York Jets. I mean, those are places where quarterbacks, young and old, go to die, whether it be early draft picks like Sam Darnold or Zach Wilson or Aaron Rodgers. You know, you look at the history of the Cleveland Browns trading back into the first round to get players. You mentioned Johnny Manziel before I cut you off. I mean, Johnny Manziel, for a variety of reasons, failed. So there are some franchises where if he said franchises don't know how to evaluate quarterbacks, he would have been right on. Yet it's no coincidence that the San Francisco 49ers, can spend all kinds of draft capital to move up and get Trey Lance, and then Trey Lance turns into a total bust. Yet they're saved by selecting Brock Purdy, who was the last pick of the draft that year. You know, it's no coincidence that the Philadelphia Eagles, whether it's Carson Wentz or Nick Foles, or the kid they have now, whose name escapes me, unfortunately, they have from Alabama and Oklahoma,
Jalen Hurts.
Jalen Hurts. There you go. Thank you. I'm getting old here. They mine gold at the quarterback position. Andy Reid has got the Midas touch at the quarterback position. It's no coincidence that players like Geno Smith or Sam Darnold, you know, start with the Jets. They have miserable careers. They finally find success with good quarterback coaches or quarterback or organizations that know how to develop quarterbacks. So, no, I think Mel's comments were a bit absurd because he broad-brushed the entire league, and it's only some franchises in the league that have proven they have no clue how to evaluate quarterbacks.
Interesting. I definitely thought that was a surreal experience to see on TV, certainly. So I guess the biggest question is, in your eyes, where does Shedeur go from here? Does he even make the team, do you think? Because obviously, like you mentioned, they drafted Dylan Gabriel in the third round, but that was also kind of a reach.
Well, I mean, they drafted Dylan Gabriel in the third round to be their backup quarterback. So, and I agree that Dylan Gabriel could potentially be a very good backup quarterback in the league because he's a guy that makes a lot of plays with his head as opposed to physical skills, which he's lacking. I mean, Shedeur Sanders is going to compete for a job with the Browns. The Browns quarterback situation is wide open. They brought in Kenny Pickett. I mean, Kenny Pickett is an example of poor evaluation of a quarterback. You know, then they signed Joe Flacco late. We'll see if he can, you know, hit lightning in the bottle again with that organization. But Shedeur Sanders is going to compete. I think one thing, last thing on that Mel forgot about is, you know, football coaches do exactly that. They coach football players. And when they see a guy that's bigger, faster, and stronger than everybody else, they feel that they have the ability to turn that big, strong, fast athlete into a football player. If you talk to scouts, what they'll tell you is when they look at a player, they look at what he does well and what he can do. And then they feel that they will be able to coach the rest out of him. Doesn't always work, especially with the quarterback. You know, that's why I said, forgetting about the interviews, forgetting about the father. When you watch the Shedeur Sanders film, he makes a lot of poor fundamental mistakes, holds the ball too long, takes bad sacks, runs in reverse, trying to improvise. Those can be very difficult things to coach out of a quarterback to get him, you know, to play properly.
I guess this could be probably the last thing about Shedeur that we talk on, but you know, you had the Steelers or Shedeur going to the Steelers at 21 overall. Obviously, you laid out the foundation of everything that's gone wrong with Shedeur already in the last 20 minutes that we've been talking about it. But is there anything else besides maybe like Aaron Rodgers being in the picture that turned the Steelers away?
Well, what I said was that Mike Tomlin, he was a favorite of Mike Tomlin. And I'm sure there was a lot. And I believe that NFL Network, Ian Rapoport, who I know and I like, had said that the half the room, half the Steelers room, wanted Shedeur Sanders. I guess the half that didn't want him won out through the first five rounds. Eventually, they took Will Howard. So, you know, there's – it depends on who has the most pull, who has the loudest voice in the war room, and who was also willing to compromise the most. Because, you know, Shedeur, there were some people in the Giants organization that thought they should have selected Shedeur with the third pick of the draft. That is absolutely true as well. So, you know, a lot of things go on draft day in the war room. You know, you see what happens after they make the player and everybody's happy and they're shaking hands and they're hugging each other. You know, I know of situations where people had to be held back because they almost got in the fights. And those things often do happen. I'm not saying it happened in the Steelers war room, but, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. And eventually the head guy, the general manager, or the general manager and the coach will come to some conclusion about the player they're going to select.
Makes sense. There's one thing that I would like to add about Shedeur Sanders. This is per David Naylor from On3 Sports. The Toronto Argonauts of the CFL have added Shedeur Sanders to their negotiation list. And in the event that Sanders decides to pursue an opportunity to play in the CFL, which allegedly could happen, the Argonauts have first shot to acquire him. Like, is that something that you think he would actually do? Or is that something that Dion would even allow?
Yeah, do anybody remember Rocket Ishmael? I mean, Rocket Ishmael was drafted, I believe, by the Argonauts draft day and decided to play with them, which blew up the New England Patriots plans. I think this was like in 1991. You got to go back to look at that. So, you know, listen, money talks. I think the father, Dion, who is the primary force in this, wants him to play in the NFL, wants him to succeed in the NFL, to give the finger to the NFL after teams pass down through the fifth round, but it's an option. I mean, it's happened before. Like I said, if you're not familiar with it, go look up Rocket Ishmael and see what happened there.
That's right. That's a really good point. So right now we're going to take a quick break for a few seconds. And when we come back, we are going to do a quick breakdown on some of Tony Pauline's biggest winners and losers. Don't go anywhere. This is the Fumble Risky Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides. Welcome back to the Fumble Risky Podcast, brought to you by Power 88, Dean Radio, and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm your host, CJ Medeiros. With me, of course, Chris Kostich, and our very special guest, Sports Key to Zone, Tony Pauline, their draft analyst. So, moving on with our second and final segment for today, we're going to take a look at who he hails as some of the draft's winners and their biggest losers. So first, I want to address your New York Giants. They made what, in my opinion, was the smart decision to stay put at three and grab Abdul Carter. But then they traded back into the first for Ole Miss's very own Jackson Dart. So obviously you like those picks. Can you elaborate a little more about what to you made your Giants the winners?
Well, first of all, they're not my Giants. I'm actually a New York Jets season ticket holder. I work with the Giants, but they're not my Giants. And Abdul Carter, they got the best player of the draft with the third pick. You know, there was a time before the league went quarterback crazy that the impact defensive player is what was most coveted at draft time. That's exactly what Abdul Carter is. And Jackson Dart, they got potentially their quarterback of the future, and I don't think they gave up all that much to get him. I mean, they gave away a third-round pick in 2026. The third-round pick in this year that they gave away was a compensatory pick, and it's like found money. And it really was more of an early fourth-round pick than it was a third-round pick. Darius Alexander's got some upside. I mean, he's a big-bodied, athletic guy who can add some playmaking ability on the interior of that defensive line. Cam Scatterbaugh, as I wrote about, is going to be a legend as far as Giant fans are concerned. There's going to be a lot of oohs and ahs when he's barreling over defenders rather than running around them. He's a great complement to what they have there in Tyrone Tracy, who was a fantastic late-round pick a year ago. Marcus Bowe of Purdue. I'm told they're going to try him at tackle. That's going to be interesting. I think he's more of a zone blocking guy, a zone blocking lineman, I should say. He's athletic. He's quick. He's mobile, but he's got to get strong. He's a little light in the butt there, which is not good. Thomas Fedoni, I think, was a terrific seventh round pick. I think he's a real good number two tight end, a good pass catcher who does an adequate job blocking.
Looking at some of the other winners they had in this draft, Patriots were one of them. We're big Pats fans on the pod, but looking at them, you had winners of the drafts. What makes them potentially a pretty dangerous team for this coming season?
Well, you hope the new coach, who has had a lot of success in the past, you hope that the quarterback can take the next step up. And the fact that they not only drafted player that they hope will protect the quarterback at left tackle in Will Campbell, but they also brought in some weapons for the quarterback in Travion Henderson and Kyle Williams. I mean, you look at the Patriots' history, especially with receivers in the early part of the draft, they draft, you know, players that are highly rated, but they always bust. I mean, Kyle Williams will hopefully break that mold. He's not a game changer. He's not a game dominator, but he's very solid. I think he's a reliable source, a reliable pass catcher. Jared Wilson could be their center of the future. I like Joshua Farmer in the fifth round. I think he's a guy that could that will fit that system and could see time early as a rookie.
All right. So you also mentioned, because I know you're short with time here. So real quick, I also wanted to mention the Philadelphia Eagles. What exactly makes them tick, and how do they keep finding these players? Like Jahan Campbell at 31, really?
What makes him tick is Howie Roseman. I mean, he's the best in the business, as I wrote, if you follow me at all. When Woody Johnson was having his problems again with the Jets, what he should have done is gone to Howie Roseman, and give him 10% equity of the team to take over the Jets. But Woody Johnson's never going to do that. I mean, again, if you read what I wrote right before the draft, Jahan Campbell has got shoulder issues, and he may miss a portion, potentially his entire rookie year, because he's very likely going to need another surgery on those shoulders. I reported that the day before. It was either Tuesday or maybe Wednesday. I thought he could fall out of the first round. He fell at the 31st pick. And, you know, Howie Roseman gets an incredibly talented defender who may miss a portion of his rookie year, but now selecting him in the first round, Howie Roseman controls him for 5 years, so be it. Because even if he misses this year, he can add that, he can invoke that fifth-year option. Makubu is a terrific center fielder that can go sideline to sideline, fills a need. Ty Robinson's one of the defensive linemen from Nebraska. They took him the fourth round. One of my favorite players in the draft. Exceptional defensive lineman the past 2 years. At Nebraska, they used him at end. They used him at tackle. They put him over the nose. I was at the Ohio State game when they lined him up at nose tackle. And he just ate Seth McLaughlin alive, a player that some who at that time thought was going to be a mid-round choice. Kyle McCaudrew Kendall is an outstanding center, good swing player on the inside. Kyle McCord, you know, maybe Kyle McCord may never see any game action. with the Philadelphia Eagles. But if they develop him, they have a chip to trade moving forward. And then Cam Williams in the sixth round. There were people who in October, November thought that Cam Williams, the big right tackle from Texas, could be a first round pick. He got injured. He was playing with a bad knee. Everyone in the world saw that play where he gave up that horrible sack to Jack Sawyer in the semifinal game, which resulted in the scoop and score. There's some questions about his effort. It is some questions about his readiness. But the fact is this. I mean, worst case scenario, the Eagles put Cameron Williams on injury reserve for a year. They try and develop him for the future. If they do, they've got a guy that they can plug in there at right tackle. As I said, the problem with the Eagles draft is there's too many good players and there's not enough room on the Eagles roster. So a lot of these guys are going to get cut and picked up by other teams and make the rosters of other teams.
Yep, that is a great point. You know, Howie Roseman always does seem to find it. But Chris, one more thing. Just like one final lightning round.
Yeah, just real quick on the draft losers. Your one loser was the Broncos and their first round pick today. Barron, second round pick, ended up being RJ Harvey, running back out of UCF. Do you feel that the Broncos just didn't do enough to kind of advance themselves and take that extra step into a season last year where they made the playoffs, and this year they're trying to expand on that?
Well, there were real no losers in the draft. I was asked to write an article about who did the best and who did the worst, and I kept going through the list, and I didn't see any drafts that I thought were terrible, that I thought on paper, because that's all we're looking at now, are drafts on paper, our names on a piece of paper, that you're like, wow, what the heck did they do? The only thing with the Broncos that surprised me is they had the ability to get Matthew Golden, Omarion Hampton, players like that that would have really helped their offense and Bo Nix early on. They chose Jahdae Barron. I like RJ Harvey, but I liked him in the fourth round. I like Pat Ryan, but I liked him in the sixth round. So, I mean, I think they got decent players. I just thought that there were other prospects available to them when they were called to the clock, especially in the early rounds, that were higher rated or would have helped them. They would have had more immediacy in the 2025 season. There were no teams out there that I looked at their drafts and went, oh, this is ugly. Not at all. Just some questionable, why didn't they go, in the Broncos case, why didn't they take a Matthew Golden or a Marion Hampton, rather decided to go for a Jahdae Barron?
Well, that's a good point. And once again, we got to wrap up here, but seriously, Tony, thank you for coming on. It means the world to us. Always great to listen to one of the premier draft analysts in the sports world, SportsKita's very own. Everyone go to SportsKita.com. Check out his work. It's truly some great stuff. And he was the first one to talk about Shador falling, so hats off to that. So that will do it for us today. Thank you for listening. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we also have all of our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram page at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we will see you next time. Over and out.